Four men, masters in their fields, coming together to pontificate on science and technology. These great men, dedicated to truth, honor, and justice in the American way, are the Gizmo Sisters.
And welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 97. And here today, I'm Chris.
And I'm Paul.
And we're going to talk to you about tech. We haven't done a show since Christmas. I know it's been 4 months, but I'll tell you, in my opinion, it's kind of funny because there hasn't been a whole lot of good tech coming out. At least nothing to really talk about.
Yeah, not a whole lot going on.
You know, there's a lot of anticipation. And pent-up demand for newer Apple products. And I don't know if you saw this article, but it was comparing Apple to a movie studio and how they will release a franchise, you know, how a movie studio will release a franchise. And in this case, I'll use the example of, like, the new Spider-Man. So you have the new Spider-Man and you release a franchise, and then they will spend the next 5 to 10 years building upon that franchise by doing sequels. And then when that kind of plays out, that's when they bring out their next big franchise. And that's kind of the way Apple works. So they bring out a major product category, you know, and then they build upon that franchise over a period of 5, 10, 20 years or longer. And, you know, like the Mac's been around since 1984. So that's definitely, you know, a much longer franchise, mm-hmm. although it has dramatically changed probably in the last 15 years. But, you know, we're kind of anticipating what's Apple going to bring out. We know they're going to bring out some things. I kind of have my notes on, you know, where they're at and when they will bring it out. And that's part of it's based upon experience. Part of it's based on speculation. We know that the Worldwide Developers Conference is going to be in June. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about iOS 8, possibly talk about the next upgrade after Mavericks. I have a feeling, though, iOS 8 will be the big talk this year because they usually alternate years. It usually goes iOS, macOS 10, iOS, macOS 10. And Mavericks, frankly, hasn't been around all that long for them probably to have devoted enough development time to add some, you know, new features that would be compelling for them to release something and then to upgrade. I think we're gonna see the second generation Haswell MacBooks and MacBook Pros here. As well as iMacs and all that. The MacBook Airs and Pros will probably come out probably that July-August time frame because they want to hit all those kids going back to college mm-hmm. and high school who need machines today.
Yeah, that'll prompt some sales there.
And I'm assuming the iPhone will be talked about around the iOS 8 time period and then released in the fall. I also think that around Christmas, we'll see the iPad Apple TV updates because, you know, the iPad Air and the new iPad Retina Display Mini haven't been around for a year yet, and they're going to live that for... They will live those products for 12 months.
That's where we're possibly going to see Siri and Apple TV.
Yeah, I think you're going to see Siri. I think you're going to see the App Store. I think you're going to see... And that's something that they might talk about at WWDC is, you know, get developers ready to start developing for the App Store and talk about, you know, I think there'll be a game controller and there might be an update to the Apple TV that includes a remote that is a game controller. I also see Apple possibly not doing that and possibly saying your iPhone or your iPod Touch is your game controller or your iPad, you know, because they have a wonderful ecosystem where everything works together from your Mac to your iPhone, to your iPad, to the Apple TV, you know, it just all works. And,
well, they got some more competition that the Apple TV does now with Amazon's new box, which has the voice.
Yeah, but, you know, so I have every box. I will.
Do you have that one yet?
I do not have that box. I don't know that I will buy that box. There's no compelling reason to me to buy it. I don't really care about, you know, voice talking to the TV. I mean, the Xbox, we have an Xbox One and we do that with it and it's like, it works.
Well, the only thing I think, and I haven't tried it yet though, it's a pain in the butt to type on with a remote on screen. I think it would be a lot quicker to voice command the name of a movie or an actor than to sit and type it out when you're searching.
Yeah, but
that's the only thing I thought.
You know, the thing you got to look at, though, is so my kids have complained as of late because I dumped my Netflix account.
I'm about ready to do that.
And I dumped my Hulu account. I have other technologies I'm using. But we also, I pay for Amazon Prime every year. I save more than even the new greater cost in shipping at Christmas alone from Amazon Prime. So I get all that free. And so we've been using Amazon Prime, which in a way makes the Apple TVs less functional in the house for the kids, because they were watching Amazon or Hulu and Netflix and stuff on there. And at some point I may readjust how we're doing cable and I'll get those back again. But, you know, in looking at it, I would rather pay the $50 and get a Roku box. You know,
I look at
the Roku as disposable technology, and you know, and I have a Chromecast too, which works with the apps on your phone and your iPad or your Android phone or Android tablet or Chrome on your Mac or PC. But I'll tell you, the least functional of them all is the Chromecast.
Really?
Yeah, for $35, I'd spend the $15 more and get the Roku box. Because at the end of the day, I got a nice remote. It plugs to the TV. It tucks the internet directly. There's no using something else as a middleman to start the talk. And that's really a lot of the appeal to the Apple TV.
I have, I've got a Roku box. I've got an Apple TV. I've got a Samsung DVD player with apps on it. And I have moved that Roku box around this house so much just because of, what I get. And I've,
in my house, there's one Chromecast. There's four Apple TVs. There's five Roku boxes. We're about to get our
really?
Six. Yeah. And, largely that's because I don't know if you guys have ever heard about Plex. Plex is a wonderful free media server, that you can download, and it works with Windows and Mac OS X and Linux. And it has applications for, my Ouya, game console has Plex on it. You can get Plex for it. But, I have Plex for my Android tablet and my iOS devices and my Windows tablets. And I did pay and got a lifetime Plex pass so that I can sync media off my Plex server to my phones and tablets and all this other stuff. And it's great. And but the Roku box has Plex. Plex, anything I have on my media server now that I'm serving up through Plex, any TV in the house can now get.
Also, Plex now has the photo sync.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, it'll sync your phone. It'll sync your photos automatically, which is great.
Yep.
Which is great.
And, I think Apple's going to add the games. I think the games are going to be really compelling. And I think that's going to, then make the Apple TV even more relevant than it is. I also don't think, this, in some respects, is still Steve Jobs Apple. In other respects, it isn't. I think Tim Cook and them will enable Plex or something. When they add the App Store, yeah. I'm sure Plex will be one of the first apps, because it's available already in the iOS. It'll be one of the first apps available for the Apple TV. And if that happens, I hate to say it, but Roku won't be getting much more of my money at that point. Not because I absolutely love the Apple TV over the Roku, but there are things the Apple TV does that the Roku can't. Like, I can mirror my Mac directly to it. So when I do a presentation, I don't have to plug into any projector. It just works. I can mirror any application on my iPhone or my iPad. Right.
So the last time I saw new apps appear on my Apple TV, was that an iOS upgrade, or is that just a patch type upgrade they ran?
They call them iOS upgrades, or Apple TV, which is iOS.
So it actually was a rev of
the it software? It's a patch that's adding some new functionality. The other day they just added a couple of channels, Lifetime Network and something else.
But you don't think Plex will appear until like iOS 8?
I don't know that it...
If it does.
I think it'll appear before that, but I don't think it'll be one of those apps that Apple will add...
But there's... Until the App Store.
Until they put an App Store on it. Yeah.
Okay.
Because when they go to the App Store model, they're going to...
So you're not hearing rumors of that Plex coming soon to Apple TV?
Well, I mean...
That's why I take my Roku box into the room where I have my Apple TV, so I can run Plex.
I think it'll happen.
Yeah.
I think Plex support will absolutely happen. The other thing that I love about the Apple TV is because it costs more, but the device is built better than any of the other devices, including the Rokus. Because I've gone through several Rokus over... I was one of the original Roku when it was called the Netflix streaming box by Roku.
Mm-hmm.
And we had three of those, and only... We had one for our house. I gave one to my mother and gave one to my aunt for Christmas. And the one that my mother has is the only one that's still operating. Because, you know, just as a consumer electronic made by cheap Chinese companies, ours burn up. You know, we used it so much, and it was on all the time. And it just,
oh, really?
Yeah. I think the new Rokus are better. They're a lot smaller. And, you know, for $50, you can get the stick that, you know, looks just like the Chromecast, except it's a full Roku box. And, like, that's what we're about ready to buy one of those to put in our kitchen at home. Is that way it's hidden on the back of the kitchen TV. You can't see it, but you have the...
Yeah, that's nice. Full functionality there.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to that? Was it called the Boxy Box or something? Remember that box that looked like it was sitting on its...
I don't know what happened to Boxy. It took them forever to bring it out. It didn't seem to... It was really expensive. It was a couple $100.
It's like the first one out, wasn't it? One of them?
No, Apple TV was still out before that. But I think Linksys or D-Link or somebody built the Boxy Box. And, you know, today, because Boxy was a software product, you know, you could download for free and kind of like Plex. Nobody talks about Boxy anymore.
I don't hear anything about it. I thought you might have had one.
You talk about Plex, you hear about XBMC, you know, which started off on the original Xbox, took that hardware and made it a media center as opposed to being a game console. And now XBMC runs on everything. And, you know, the best XBMC server I have ever played with is one built off a Raspberry Pi.
Huh.
And, you know, so for $35, you can do that as well. But, you know, I think there's a lot of cool stuff. I think one of the things Apple's going to do is, we talk about touchscreen laptops and, you know, so Microsoft's focus was, I'm going to take every device that's Windows 8, because Windows 8 is not really that functional as a desktop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have some apps that I use on my Surface Pro. In the desktop, but without, I have the type cover, you know, which is a real keyboard cover, but without that, it would be mostly useless. And it's not that the on-screen keyboard is great in Windows 8. It's the mouse. There, those apps that are not touch enabled or designed for touch suck without a mouse.
Yeah.
Cause you know, you can't hit the buttons or you can't adjust things because they don't account for the gross motor movement. You know, they want, they're designed for mouse input. It's just, they're not. And until Microsoft resolves that, I think they're always going to be what I call these hybrid, with, you know, what they're pushing is they're always going to want to push a hybrid type laptop type thing where it's a touch screen, but it's also a laptop with a keyboard. And there's some great ones out there. Asus makes some great ones. Acer and their Timeline X series, which I have a non-touch enabled one of those. That was my Windows laptop before my Surface Pro. But I think Apple's going to do something. You know, they went a different direction. They went into, hey, we're going to do multi-touch and all the same stuff on our Macs. And that's one of the reasons I think they went to the glass trackpad, because it was easier to track finger movement and multi-touch and all that stuff. I think they're going to continue that, because... In my personal opinion, if you get much bigger than... And there are a few devices that are neat, that are tablets that are much bigger. Like Dell has a 16-inch tablet that's kind of a hybrid lap. You know, it's their version of a Microsoft Surface, but it's 16 inches. And, you know, there's some games and stuff that are really cool to play. And Lenovo has some huge ones. They have a 27-inch, what they call a tabletop computer, and it's basically a touchscreen Windows 8 box that you lay down on its back, and it's a, and you know, has a 27-inch screen, and there's some cool games you can play on it. I mean, you know, Dungeons and Dragons type games where you have characters and, you know, and the map is interactive, and when you put the character on the screen, it does certain things. That's really cool. But as far as computing experience goes, you know, even surfing the web with it is kind of
yeah.
And I think Apple's going to take that trackpad and multi-touch, and we're going to see these trackpads get bigger.
Really?
And I think they're going to add more multi-touch capability, and they'll still be able to... Because if you look at what Apple's done, it's really elegant. Where they have taken the traditional Mac OS X, and then they had iOS, which we call them two different things. They're both built on Narwhal. Underlying, it's the same operating system. It's just the window managers, the GUI that operates differently. But they've taken elements from iOS, and they keep adding it to Mac OS X. One of them is like Launchpad, which gives you almost the same application type look to get to all your apps and launch those apps. And it's what's so elegant about it is that you don't realize that, you know, there's no thought about, oh, I'm doing this and it's a different mode, and I'm doing this in a different mode. Not like the desktop mode and the Metro mode that you get in Windows 8. Mm-hmm. It's all integrated in this one thing. And I think they're going to just build upon that. And we're just, over time, you're going to see that. But I don't really want to reach up and touch a big screen sitting in front of me. That screen is for me to see. But if you put all the touch capability where the trackpad is, or where my wrists rest, or wherever on a laptop, that is going to be a killer app. I think just looking at some of the patents that Apple holds and what they've done with the glass trackpad and the multi-touch already in Mac OS X, I think we're going to see more of that going forward.
That's interesting you say that. We were in the Apple store last weekend in New York, and my little one actually wants a trackpad for her iMac.
Well, I mean,
at home... And that's what she wants.
Yeah, well, you know, at home, I have a 13-inch Retina display MacBook Pro. It has two Thunderbolt ports on it. At home, when I sit at my desk, I have a Bluetooth keyboard and a Bluetooth trackpad and two 27-inch monitors that plug into the Thunderbolt ports, and, you know, I shut the lid, and then I have my full desktop. And I used to have the Magic Mouse and all that. I cannot live without that big multi-touch trackpad.
Really?
You know, without that, it's just not nearly as functional. The other thing that Apple has done for me that has totally ruined the computer experience is... You have to pardon, we're doing this in Paul's basement and somebody's calling us.
But. Looks like we've got a caller on line two. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, well, okay. Sure, we're going to get to that question in just a minute. If you just hold on, caller, and that's going to be talked about in our next segment. Thanks.
But, you know, the bigger thing is... Apple's ruined me for any other kind of trackpad. Windows laptop trackpads, and I have a few. My Acer Timeline, even the little trackpad that you get on touch cover and type covers for the Surface and Surface Pro. And particularly, I have a Lenovo laptop. That has to be the worst trackpad I've ever had in my life. It luckily has the little pointer.
Oh, yeah, I never use those.
And I actually turn the trackpad off and only use that on that laptop. That's how bad the trackpad is. And they all, you know, and I'm so used to doing it on even with, like, Windows 8 with a touchscreen, you know, I'll do two-finger swipe, and I'll do all the, you know, I pinch to zoom and all this on the trackpad on the Mac, and I'm trying to do this, and one, it's too small, and two, it doesn't support multi-track. One of the big things is, so, you know, two-finger scroll, like you're reading a website, or you're in a document, I scroll down, you know, with two fingers and scroll up with two fingers. And, you know, all these trackpads, they want you to, there's like a stripe on the side of some of them. And you put your finger on it and you try to scroll and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Or they want you to hit the Lenovo with the finger pointer or the trackpad. They want you to hit a third, they have three buttons above the trackpad. And they want you to hit the rightmost button and then it enables scrolling. And it's like, really?
Yeah. This is... Like Control-Alt-Delete.
Yeah. You know, so I think there's some good things to come that people just don't think about. you know, Tim Cook, they just did their results 2 days ago. You know, Apple's doing great. They sold more iPhones in that last quarter than they've ever sold. They sold, even though iPads, they didn't sell as many as they thought they were going to sell, they still sold more than they thought, or more than they've ever sold. You know, and there's a lot of criticism, you know, well, why, from investors, well, why isn't Apple stock price doing well? And they're doing some things. They're doing a 7-to-1 split, which in my case means I'm now the owner of 700 shares when that split happens. But they're also doing a huge buyback because they're going to change and make their, they know their stock price is undervalued where it's at. And so they're trying to fix that for investors.
Mm-hmm.
And, but what was probably even more interesting on the earnings call was a lot of people were, you know, talking to Tim Cook about, you know, hey, where's your new innovative thing? You know, you guys aren't like Steve Jobs. And, you know, and the reality of it is they very much still are under that. It's a culture. Steve didn't build it himself or did it in a vacuum. It was a culture he built with Jonathan Ives and Phil Schiller and Tim Cook and the whole management team. They all had to have this vision to make it happen. And one of the things I thought was really smart from what Tim Cook said was that, and I'm going to read the quote, is, to do things really well, it takes time. You can see a lot of products that have been brought to market where thinking isn't really deep. Hence, Samsung Galaxy Gear, most Samsung phones, including the Galaxy S5. And don't get me wrong, Paul is an avid Samsung Galaxy user.
Yeah, but I'm probably going to... If I buy another device, it would probably be a Nexus.
And, but he says, where the thinking really isn't deep, and as a consequence, these things don't go very well. And he, or do very well. He's really, you know, Apple's not, the one thing everybody needs to forget about is Apple does not want to be the first to market. No engineering company does. What they want to be is the best. At okay. What they do.
Yeah. Well.
And so they're going to watch people, you know, enter markets prematurely, bring out devices that are half-assed, frankly. And then they're going to look at it and go, okay, what is the real demand for this product? And if there is a real demand, what do people want? And how can we make them make that better than what they want? And I think we're in that cycle. And it's not just Apple. It's all of them. It's Apple. It's Samsung. It's Microsoft. We're in the cycle right now where the thought leaders are thinking about, okay, what are the new emerging markets and technology? How does it integrate with our current portfolio? And how can we make it better? And that's where Apple definitely is. That's the way they've always been since the second coming of Steve Jobs. I think Samsung is absolutely not that, because Samsung makes some good stuff. I've always loved Samsung laptops.
I like Samsung TVs.
Yeah, Samsung's made good TVs. Yeah. The hardware in their phones are not bad. Where Samsung sucks, their software is awful. There's a new, and this was on.
I turn everything off.
This was Android Central saying, Samsung Galaxy S5 users, so far use none of. They want none of the Samsung software, and I think most Android users you're going to find they want stock Android,
which is why they go with Nexus.
That's devices. Right. That's why you go with the Nexus device. Yeah. And. So, you know, Samsung's business model is we're going to, if it sounds cool and we think we can sell 1,000 of them, we're going to build it and we're going to just flood the market with as much stuff as we can.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not the smartest way, because if you look at, you know, it's funny. You have to look at success in a couple ways. And I think Samsung looks at it the wrong way. Samsung looks at it as, well, we have the most devices out there. But Samsung makes a very small amount of profit on the entire industry. Apple makes many, many fewer devices. They make the lion's share of the profit in the entire mobile industry. They make the lion's share of profit in the PC laptop industry. You know, I look at that as success. Because at the end of the day, the money keeps the company going. You know,
mm-hmm.
and I just don't see Samsung's model really working in the long term. you know, keeping the company viable, you know, past a decade or two decades. You know, they're Samsung, in essence, is going, we're seeing them, and I see this with a lot of, HTC is another company who's the same way. We're going to see them expand, and then we're going to see them greatly contract because of the way they want, or they're going to market with everything.
So what do you think about Samsung tablets versus iPads? How do you see the future of that?
I actually think Samsung's going to lose that battle.
Yeah?
I had a Galaxy Tab. Of all the tablets I've owned, and I've owned a lot, it's by far the worst tablet.
Really?
Yeah. If I were buying an Android tablet, I'm going to go with a Nexus. I have a Nexus 7 today. I've played with the Nexus 10. I love the Nexus 10.
Really?
I would never buy another Galaxy.
So long tablet. Those long, not to keep taking this down the stream, but do you have a Chromebook?
Yes.
You like that?
Yes, for the limited functionality it provides. So it's interesting you bring up the Chromebook. I'm thinking
about buying one. That's why I bring it up.
I like the Chromebook.
I just got an Office 365 yearly subscription. So I'm thinking coupling that with a Chromebook. I've got a browser and I've got my Office productivity. Now, I don't think the like printer support, things like that, are very good on it.
It's not bad. I have the Samsung Chromebook. I actually think they make a good Chromebook.
Really?
You know, it's an ARM processor, 16 gig of SSD in it.
How much was it? Did you pay for it?
$249. I've had it for over.
Price points. Yeah, great.
But it's limited functionality. I would never give up my MacBook Pro or my Surface Pro for a Chromebook. There, no way. But I'll tell you, when I go to like Panera and I go up to grab my food, I don't have any issue leaving my Chromebook laying on the table.
Yeah.
Nobody's gonna steal that piece of shit. Okay. And you know, it has Chrome on it. I'm not. It has no issues logging into Office 365, you know, but, you know, without an internet connection, Office 365 is useless on the Chromebook. If you're using a lot
of... offline functionality on it? Yeah.
A lot of the Google apps? Yeah, so, you know...
All
of Google Docs works. Essentially, it's preloaded into the system.
All those work offline.
There's offline Gmail. There's quite a few apps that are available. I couldn't record a podcast on it. There's just not enough processing power in any of them to do it. Chromebook runs Linux underneath. And it's kind of funny. So, the school district my kids go to school in,
mm-hmm.
They're switching away from hard textbooks to using computing devices to do all the homework and provide textbooks. And if you do not bring your own, my daughter brings her MacBook Air to school.
Mm-hmm.
Or her iPad mini. But if you do not have your own or bring your own, the school provides Chromebooks. And it works out for them. You know, they have a good network. They use Google Docs. Even regardless of whose device you have, you use Google Docs. And they, you know, they submit their homework through Gmail and have their own Gmail accounts. And I think it's a great thing. I also think... the promise of bringing Linux to everybody is through Chromebooks. I think that's the way it's going to come. And I'm not...
Because of the economy of it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the other thing is like the Samsung Chromebook. There's a version of Ubuntu you can download and erase the Linux Chrome OS and put Ubuntu on it. You know? And it's a pretty sharp little device. It has a USB 3 port, and you know, mine's a year and a half old because that was in the first wave. You know, there's a lot of other ones that are newer. Although, as far as computing devices to go, we talk about them being a couple $100, which a lot of people have issues buying electronics that are a couple $100 and consider them disposable. I consider Chromebooks disposable. The HP ones, which are really cool, I actually was thinking about replacing mine, have had so many issues. They've had recalls on the power supplies. They're just not well made. You know, and the Samsung by far, a lot of people like the Acer. Now the Acer uses an Intel Celeron processor. So as far as a piece of hardware goes, it's actually more akin to a regular laptop, although it's ultra lightweight, you know. The reason I liked the Samsung is 11 inches, mm-hmm. like a MacBook Air.
You have 11 and 13?
The HP makes a 13.
Yeah.
And that's what I was looking at the HP for. And then, you know, Google also has the Pixel, which is, you know, their Retina display type. There's no Chromebook worth $1,500.
Gee, okay. <what is? laughs>
So, you know, you got to look at what you're getting from a hardware perspective.
Yeah.
You know, you want all the latest and greatest. There's no value in buying a Chromebook. You know, and you're not going to run Final Cut Pro. You're not going to run Photoshop on a Chromebook. You're pretty much, if you just want to edit documents, do email, you know, surf the web, play online games, that kind of stuff, Chromebook is perfect. It's probably, for a kid, it could easily be their main and only computer but there's no parental controls on it either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which you would get on a Windows or a Mac, you know.
Right.
But, you know, if you're giving a kid their first laptop-type device, I could see giving them a Chromebook, you know. Mm-hmm. Particularly if it's something they were just going to use for school. But there's no college kid who could take a Chromebook, in my opinion, and make it through school with it, you know.
Right. It says no enough functionality.
Yeah. But, you know.
But for the price,
but,
and
you know,
for doing
you talk about your
simple things.
Yeah, for doing, I mean, and like I said, it does.
And if I got an Office 365 and I've got Wi-Fi.
Even Google Docs. Google Docs, for what most people do, and word processing spreadsheets and presentations, is more than enough functionality. And that being said, you know, it's probably the perfect computing device for seniors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not much to it. If they can operate a web browser, they can operate a Chromebook. And, you know, there are definitely enough use cases that there is a market for Chromebooks. And, you know, I do expect that as a secondary computing device in most houses, it won't be another laptop. You know, mom or dad might each have a laptop, but the kids might have a desktop that they share and then might have Chromebooks. You know, they're just cheap
enough.
That's
kind of what I was
thinking. $600, yeah. You could buy 3 Chromebooks and give one to each of your kids and say,
yeah.
You know, here. And so I definitely see it.
And a yearly subscription to 365, and, you know, they've all got Office apps.
Again, I think at that point, you're wasting money giving them 365.
Well, maybe. Unless you have someone that you know works at Microsoft.
Yeah. That's true. But, yeah, I mean, I expect to see more and better Chromebooks, but that's at such a low end of the market that you're not going
to
see a whole lot of innovation. What you're going
to
see
is a kid, though.
The innovation you're going to see in a Chromebook is not in its functionality. It's in its price.
Yeah.
I expect to see Chromebooks to get cheaper and cheaper. I actually expect to
see... They're getting better. And the functionality's come up a little bit, right? I mean, they do more today than they did when they came out.
Not as much as you think. I mean, yeah, we got... you know, it was only the word processor in Google Docs originally only had offline support. And so now all of Google Docs has offline support. Again... If you're not going to invest in the Google infrastructure and you're going to go with like Office 365,
that's
less compelling reason to go with a Chromebook. If I'm dependent upon OneDrive and Office 365, I'm going to go buy 3 of those Celeron based Asus 11 inch touchscreen laptops, you know, with Windows 8 on them. You know, because then I can, with the Office 365, and depending on what account, if you have a personal account, you can only download the software for one. But if you get the home premium account, you can put, you know, Windows or Mac version of Office on up to 5 different devices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plus you get Outlook.com for email. You get OneDrive support. It's, in a way, you got to pick your ecosystem. Luckily, because Apple and Microsoft... the way they do things, well, particularly for Apple, you get the Apple ecosystem for having the device, and you buy Office 365, and you get the Microsoft ecosystem on the same devices.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Wait a minute. I don't know if you mentioned this or not, as I was sitting there looking at something at home, but the entire Office suite's available in the Chrome store now. I saw it the other day.
Correct, but it's web-based versions that don't offer offline support.
Right. But at least it's there.
But, I mean, all it is they're... It's
it's like light.
Well, it's not even a light, it's a link. It puts a link to the web-based Office 365 that I can log into on my Mac or log into on my iPad.
And you don't get any storage or anything?
Correct.
I'm getting 20... each user on 365 gets 20 gig.
Yeah.
So, that's helpful. That solves the... so many problems for my family to have just to have that yearly subscription, and because everybody's on in the Office ecosystem, and to have that available to them with, you know, 5 subscriptions plus the Skype, you get 60 minutes of Skype call a month.
I'm not sold on Skype. It works. Well, I have it on
I
machine.
Got kids going international. I got one getting ready to go to Italy too, so those do help.
I have kids going international.
Yeah.
But
we've gotten off topic. You were on the Apple.
But wait, I mean, it just got, you know, the conversation kind of progressed because we went. But I'm just saying,
it's hard not to get off topic.
I think we're seeing a lot of innovation in the market, but it's in subtle things, and I think we're going to continue to see that. I mean, there's going to be new product. I think for wearable computing, we're still 2 to 5 years away.
Like Google Glass,
Google Glass, you know, the iWatch. I have
watches. I have
a Pebble smartwatch. I like it, but the functionality of the Pebble smartwatch is really as a second screen to my iPhone. You know, that I don't have to take my eyes off the road if I'm in the car. I can look at my watch real quick. I think if Apple brings a product out like that, I do think the iWatch, a lot of the benefits of that is health tracking. You know, I have a Fitbit, but if I had a watch that did the same thing that the Fitbit did, I'm much more likely to use it because I have to remember to plug my Fitbit in and you know, take it and put it on my belt loop or put it on my shirt collar. I don't have to remember that by putting a watch on. I put a watch on every day. Same thing with Google Glass. Google Glass, I think I may have talked about this. I guess I didn't. So I was in San Jose Airport, flying back from a conference, and there was a guy there, and he had the blue Google Glass on his glasses, and I'm sure he gets talked to all the time, but I couldn't resist. He was standing right in front of me when we were boarding the plane, and I asked him a question, and I said, "So, are you left eye or right eye dominant? Because your Google Glass is on your right hand side, and I haven't seen one on the left hand side." And he goes, "No, I'm left eye dominant. The Google Glass, I don't find it too much of a distraction, but if you're like me, I would find it as a horrible distraction being on my non-dominant eye. But it also, it sticks out, and it's something it's not something mobile. You have to either put it on a pair of sunglasses or a pair of glasses that have no prescription if you don't need glasses, it's kind of an eyesore. The other thing is, if you've read anything about Google Glass, I mean, all the legislation already against Google Glass from local municipalities, you know, really? You can't. And then there's federal legislation that's being passed and state legislation that's being passed upon, you know, you're not going to be able to drive a Google Glass. One place I see Google Glass actually having it would be like, if you had it on your dominant eye, providing a heads-up display for your car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never have to look at the dash again because it's telling you how fast you're going, or it's giving you in a transparent map giving you your GPS directions. You know, I see all kinds of applications for that.
But you wouldn't need that at all in the Google car.
Yeah, well, but that's the thing. So, you know, Apple and others are putting a lot... Apple and Microsoft have put a lot of effort in... You know, Apple calls it CarPlay. I forget what Microsoft calls theirs. But, you know, they've put a lot of effort in integrating with cars. And,
yeah,
you know, and as far as that goes... As you move forward and the future in technology and car integration, do we need Google Glass? You know? And the other thing is I just have not been totally impressed with the apps that people have come up with, you know? It's like, really? This is the best you can come up with for Google Glass? You know, I'll stick with my smartphone screen.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I haven't used it. I haven't tried it.
I haven't put one on. Yeah. But, I mean, I've seen them in person. You know, that's the other thing is Google's not... there was an article that was really, really... So Google held a conference on Google Glass. And Google CEO comes out, and the one thing he's not wearing at the conference at all... Oh, no, it was an earnings call. And they talked about Glass. And he comes out and does this earnings call. He doesn't have Google Glass. So... what you're telling your investors is that I want you to invest in this, but we don't really believe in the product. And I honestly believe that anything from a Google Glass type perspective to be successful has to be the same size, weight, and look of a pair of glasses. You know, if you went to Lens Crafters and got a new pair of glasses, or you bought a pair of Ray-Bans or Serengeti drivers or Oakleys, that Google Glass is integrated in there, but the glasses look and weigh the same.
Mm-hmm.
That until that happens, I don't think that's a successful technology model. People will think it's cool for a while, and then they'll quit using it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing about my Pebble smartwatch. It's still a watch at the end of the day, a really good watch. You know, so even if I didn't use the other stuff on it, I'd still use it as a watch.
I use my Nike Fitband for a watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Works fine.
Yeah, you know, it's there. Yeah. It tells the time. Yeah. It does what I need it to do.
Yeah.
And until that gets fixed, I just don't think. Now, other wearable computing devices, I think there's probably some use cases in market for it. And, you know, that's left to be seen. I actually think the watch market is probably the best. I think wearable devices that might be necklaces may have some play. But, you know, again, I think we're 2 to 5 years away. I think there's some technology changes that need to be refined. I think there's some new technology like battery improvements that we haven't seen yet. And until those happen, you're not going to see a proliferation of good devices.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see these kind of like the Galaxy Gear watches. You're going to see some devices that have some neat functionality, but at the end of the day...
take it or leave it.
Yeah. And well, I'll tell you, the biggest issue with Galaxy Gear that I have is that it only works with Samsung phones.
Hmm.
So, okay, I have this huge addressable market of Android, and I'm going to make it work with a subset of my own phones. So 2 or 3 handsets that I own, and one tablet, and that's what you're going to get to use this with. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here going... okay, who thought of this business model? My business model would have been, okay, we've developed this device. It'll work with every frickin' Android handset that supports KitKat. You know? And, but they, I don't know. It's a head-scratcher to me. Samsung, on one end, I'm like, you know, that's kind of cool. And then you look at them from a business perspective, and I just sit there and go, I shake my head like, you guys are just idiots. You know, and I hate to say this about Samsung, but Samsung is very much in the same position that Dell is. And Dell's struggling.
Yeah.
And what it is Samsung does not innovate. They don't. They copy. And
yeah, they're the Walmart of electronics.
Yeah. And, they put out as many devices as they can in 5 bazillion different configurations and hope some of them stick to the wall when they throw them out there. And that's what Dell did to the computer world. And look at them today. All that non-investment in their own R&D, you know, they don't know how to do R&D today, where they've got to survive.
Well, yeah, and then they tried to get in. They got into enterprise with the same model they used in the PC.
Yeah.
Mass PC market, and it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Takes a lot more specialized knowledge.
Yep. Well, I want to switch gears. So, yep. Have you heard of software-defined radio?
No.
So, basically, I love how we call it software-defined radio or SDR. there's software that will do all the functionality that a lot of that a digital tuner will do today, and they have it for your PC and Mac, and most of it's open source. It's also available for Linux. I was actually watching a video podcast, and they talked about it. And you do have to get a receiver. It's a USB device. It comes with a little antenna that goes on it. It costs $10.
It's not all software.
So, no, it's software-defined radio. It still needs some hardware. And you plug it into a USB port, and you put the software on, do a little configuration, and you can now listen to FM narrowband, FM wideband, stereo, AM, shortwave, upper band, shortwave, lower band, police radio. I mean, you name it, you can listen to it.
Really? You can sit there and tune in about any of those frequencies
you want? Yeah, for $10.
Really? And it's on a USB stick?
Yeah.
The antenna's in there?
The antenna is on a cable. It's the receiver is on a USB stick, but all the tuning stuff is done through software.
Right. Or is it... What kind of an antenna do you have to set up for it? Or
it comes with the little receiver. I mean, you could put a big antenna. It comes with a little one that has a magnetic mount. And,
yeah.
And
well, I'd put it outside if I was sitting in the house.
No, I have no issues picking up most things with it.
Have you tried aircraft?
I have not tried aircraft.
Yeah.
But
military frequencies.
I have been trying the police bands.
Yeah,
and that's interesting. You do have to get a little bit more software to do the police bands because they're trunking bands, so it's a frequency, but there's channels within the frequency that they use. But all that, you can Google that on the internet. You know, what does my local police use? And you can find out, and you can listen to the EMT bands and the fire department bands, and it's pretty cool. There's two major pieces of software out there. There's one called SDR Sharp, Software Defined Radio Sharp. It's for Windows and Linux, although the Linux port is kind of you take the Windows code and you recompile it using Mono, and it kind of, it works, but I think it doesn't work well. And I have that running on my Surface Pro with it, which is pretty cool. It has a waterfall, so you can see where, there's transmissions happening in the broad spectrum, and then you can tune the radio to those transmissions and pick things up. And all the software, the other software is GQRX, which I have on my MacBook Pro, and it's actually easier to set up the Mac version than it was to set up the Windows with SDR Sharp. And then GQRX is also on Linux, and I have yet to set that up on Linux. I tried setting up SDR Sharp, and that was the only one I couldn't get to work right.
That's cool.
But, The little receiver piece hardware is called an SDR-RTL, and you can get them on Amazon for $10. I bought two, one for me and one for my son. And it's a cool thing. And what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, for $20, can you get a receiver and transmitter? You know, and do...
Because you got a ham radio.
Well, it listens to all the ham radio bands, but you get a ham radio and software, you know, for... 20, even if it were $100, for a fraction of what it costs to have a nice ham radio.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah, you can wrap up a lot of money in those. That's cool. That's interesting. That's something I'm going to look into, because I've always been into scanners, and I like listening to aircraft. I've got one. I've got a Radio Shack antenna out on my top of my dad's hangar that I installed, and I'll go out there and hook up my Bearcat handheld to it. I can pick up Columbus and Cincinnati. It's fun. So, but the military operates up in the higher bands, and that would be cool to pick them up too.
Well, most of those are encrypted, so you'd have to have something that would unencrypt it.
They used to not be. I don't know.
Yes. Anymore they are, you know. Even some of the police bands are encrypted now.
Police gets... aggravating to me because it just, there's so much chatter going on all the time that I don't know.
I've actually spent more time. The other thing that's cool is you can record it. The software like GQRX has a recording button right in it. Really? So I can, on my favorite radio stations, I go, I really like that song. Record.
That's
you
cool.
know, but now it's a digital file. I'm not recording it to tape like we used to do.
Pick up cell phones
in the old school. No, it will not do. Cell phones are encrypted too, so. Most cell phones are. And I know there's...
What about wireless phone? Local wireless. Yeah,
you could pick that up. It'll pick a 500 megahertz band up. I mean, it's pretty cool what it'll let... It'll let you go down to 24... Depending on the band you're in, it'll go down to 24 hertz all the way up to, you know, kilohertz.
Yeah. I didn't mean to say cell phones. I meant wireless phones, yeah.
Yeah. And,
I used to listen to a lot of people talking on their phone.
Well, what I loved is, you know, you could pick up baby monitors with it. It'll do that, too. No, tell them what you can find out from that.
Mm-hmm.
But, so, the other thing that my 12-year-old daughter has really gotten into, and I know I'm going to end up having to make an investment because she wants to do it, is 3D printing.
Oh, boy.
So,
you print a gun?
No. She wants to print. She's a huge Doctor Who fan. She wants to print Doctor Who action figures and little TARDISes and make jewelry. And
well, unfortunately, right now, that's extremely expensive to do.
Actually, it's not. So, there is a MakerBot kit for $300. You have to assemble it. It has a wooden frame, but it comes with the everything you need. The software's free.
$300.
$300
on Amazon. I've heard a good 3D printer is $100,000.
No. We had to go down my daughter's iPhone 5C. We had to take it down to the Apple Store, and in our mall, where the Apple Store is also a Microsoft store.
Kenwood.
Yeah. And we went down there and had a bad headphone jack. It would only play one side of your headphones, and so they replaced her phone. Mm-hmm. I love Apple support.
Battery ran, yeah.
And we went down to the Microsoft store to look around because my wife and oldest daughter were somewhere. And they had one of the newer MakerBot 2s, which is steel frame, big platform. They were printing stuff with it in the store. It was right at the cash register.
Which store?
The Microsoft store. Yeah. And even that was, and it was making really good 3D objects.
It's called MakerBot?
Yeah.
What about the material,
though? You could get PLS or ABS plastic. PLA or ABS plastic. So ABS plastic is your standard ABS plastic that they make, you know, everything from toys to the, you know, car liners of your interior of your car.
Mm-hmm.
PLA is a sugar-based plastic. And even that, you know, you can buy a huge roll of that for like $40. Either of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in multiple colors. But like the MakerBot 2, I don't know, it was probably 2 feet by 18 inches tall. Really, really well made. And it was only a couple $1,000. You know, it was like $2,000. Or no, it was three, because I know I told the lady, I said I could go down to the Apple Store and buy me a new Mac Pro for the price of that. But $3,000 for a 3D printer? Not a lot of money.
Yeah, but capability of it, though.
Well, it was making device, or they were making models on it bigger than, like, a softball, you know? And they were detailed. Very, very detailed. Very detailed.
And then burning the materials, I mean, how much would that cost you? Say you made like a 8-inch action figures. What do you think that would cost
in material? You know, well, I actually don't think it would cost that much.
What does it do? It melts, it heats that
It heats the material and then lays it down.
Yeah.
But the one thing is, you know, when you talk about like making an 8-inch action figure, it's not solid.
Right.
You know, it's honeycombed on the inside, so there's a lot less material being used. So it's really strong, and they're, you know, the products are really light.
Be cool, and then you have something, make something paintable.
You know, oh, absolutely.
Kid could do that. Could get a lot out of that.
But, you know, I've thought about it. You know, I live on a farm. What would a $3,000 3D printer get me? Well, you know, you could actually print every one of those stupid plastic gears that you need for farm equipment, you know, that break, that you go down to the International Harvester or the New Holland dealership, and they're charging you 60 to sometimes $300 for this little nylon sleeve, and you could print one that would last as long or longer mm-hmm. out of ABS plastic, you know, for a lot less money as long as you have the time. I mean, 3D printing takes time.
Yeah.
You know, it might take all day to print an 8-inch action figure on a MakerBot 2. But
yeah.
So what? You know?
Looks like they've got a Mini. I'm looking at their site now. MakerBot Mini.
Yeah.
$1,300.
I was impressed with them. I was very impressed with them. So we've been looking at that a lot.
Interesting.
And I think that is... between that, Raspberry Pis, Arduinos, I think the maker movement is going to become more mainstream because those devices, you know, Meg Whitman said that's HP's, you know, going to be their focus is getting into the 3D printer market.
Really?
And
that's an interesting take.
You know,
they were the printer people originally.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You know,
yeah.
Ink printing is not what it used to be. I mean, companies are keeping records electronically because guess what? It's a lot easier to store them electronically than it is to store a bunch of paper. And, you know, so they're looking, you know, what's the next thing for us to do to stay relevant? And, you know, if HP can do it and they start making competition, they bring the cost of these, you know, I could see if HP gets into the market, a home, you know, that MakerBot that's $600, could be, or I mean, $3,000, could mm-hmm. be $600 once HP gets in the market. Not for MakerBot. I think their costs are probably close to what they're paying to have them manufactured. But, you know, with HP, with their own manufacturing capability, their distribution capability, you know, they're going to be able to address a much larger market.
Mm-hmm.
But, let me see if I can find this. Shopping. I'm on my iPad looking up stuff, so bear with me a moment. What we find here, the PrintBot Simple 2014 3D printer kit with PLA filament. Now, it's a small one. And it's a kit you have to put together, but it's $349 on Amazon with Amazon Prime.
That's cheap.
Yeah. I would invest in that. And like the MakerBot Replicator 2 desktop 3D printer on Prime is $2,000. I mean, it's no longer out of the range. It will be the exception rather than the rule,
mm-hmm.
but it's no longer out of the range of consumers owning them. I mean, it's kind of like you remember when color printers came out?
Yep.
You know, they were really expensive, but you know, when they got into that $1,000 range, you started seeing it wasn't uncommon to have somebody have one that you knew. Same right. thing with scanners. When you know, scanners were my first scanner, which is still probably.
But then you used to have laser. There was laser and inkjets, and lasers were really expensive, and they just kind of went by the wayside.
Yeah.
Because the inkjets came down so much in price and improved in quality.
Well, even the lasers got cheap. I mean, you can buy a color laser printer for $350.
Yeah.
You know.
But at one time, they were very expensive.
But so were scanners, you know, yeah. document scanners. Or, you know, that we scan, you know, we don't use them. Hardly anybody uses a scanner today because you take your cell phone and you take a picture of it. And,
yeah.
And then, you know, you can edit the picture and, you know. But, you know, when scanners first came out and you would take your print picture and you put it in there, my first Epson scanner, and we owned a good one, was $1,000. It was $999 at Micro Center.
Talk about taking pictures of documents, and it's really cool now, is I don't even have to go to the bank to deposit a check.
Oh, I know.
Now you can just take a picture of the check and deposit it.
Yep.
That's been so, so handy. Last thing I want to do is drive to a bank and sit in line to deposit a check. It's unfortunate that I have to do that manually anyway.
Yep.
But for some reason, my company has decided they want to reimburse me now through the mail with a check. Yeah.
That's weird.
I know.
Direct deposit is so much cheaper. And we bank from
Silicon Valley Bank, too. We get direct deposit paychecks, but we get reimbursed with paper checks.
That's weird.
So I use the photo scan.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's kind of covered everything I had in...
Yeah, we were all over the map there.
I don't know. It was a good episode.
Know, yeah.
You know, so something going on. I'm going to give you my standard pitch here at the end. We want to hear from you guys. I know it's been a long time since we've put out a show, but we welcome any feedback. Please email us or send us a audio or video mail to gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. Or visit our website at www.gizmosapiens.com and leave a comment on the post. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
Take care. You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.